Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, you might want to join in on the live call. The lines are filling up fast. The phone number is 347-884-8327. We've got some special guests with us tonight, so I'm not going to take any time at all. I'm going to get right to the guests, and then we're going to get right to your calls. So if you've got a question, line them up, press 1, Lisa will screen your calls, and we're going to get right to them tonight. We're doing a maintenance-themed roundtable. So if you have questions specifically regarding maintenance, we've got some people here, the experts, to help answer your questions. And I'm going to get right to them, and they're going to get right to you. So first off, let's bring on Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, anymore, I know you've been busy and we've been busy. The only time I get to talk to you is when we do a show together.
That's right. You bypassed us. You were in Ohio the other week, and we never saw you.
Well, we got set back. Speaking of maintenance, we got set 2 days behind with the maintenance issue. We had no brake lights on the motorhome. And one of our other guests tonight, David Counts from Fleet Air Filter, spent many, many phone calls with me trying to figure it out ourselves. We went through all the, you know, the obvious stuff. I spent about 3 or 4 hours on it and just couldn't find it anywhere.
Right.
And we took it to Freightliner there in Youngstown, and it took them about 12 hours to find the problem. And then when they found it, they didn't have the part to fix it. It was a diode. So David sent me one. David tracked them down, overnighted them to me, and we put it in and got it fixed. But it put us, you know, over 2 days behind, so we didn't get a chance to stop by.
Okay.
So I'm sure you're going to have questions, so I'm going to bring on David and also Mike Beckett. And I'm going to leave your mic open, so don't be making any funny noises in the background.
All right. We've got some new products online, too, so I wanted to tell you about.
Well, let's do that. Well, we've got John. Okay. Let's do that.
You know, back in 97, we got into the heavy-duty radiator core, and the company that was building them for us did not make it through the recession. He was taken over by another company who I didn't care for because the guy had some unethical business practices. If he would produce a rad that didn't work up to your expectations, they wouldn't take it back. And so, needless to say, we ate a couple rads and we ceased to do business with them. Well, we have now teamed up with another custom radiator manufacturer, and they can build any size custom rad, any amount of tubes, types of tubes, fins per inch. Even if we want to make a radiator that's 8 feet long and 6 feet high, they can do it. So
wow.
That was really, really great news. We were out of town for 2 days this week meeting with them and going over some new designs. And We do have a few in stock right now.
Excellent. Well, good.
So I'll have more in the next couple weeks to talk to you about that.
Okay, good.
We have our first shipment of Fleet air filters came in, and we're placing our first order for True Balance and Balance Masters.
Wow, fantastic. So, another location to get those things taken care of.
Right.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're excited about that. Speaking of Fleet air filters, let's get to David Counts. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. What's going on tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, sitting in paradise, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you guys are. I've seen all those pictures, man. They're beautiful. That seems like it's an awesome place up there.
Well, you know, it's we said we were going to be taking some time off, and that's not really true. I mean, we're working just about as hard as we normally work. We're just sitting in a beautiful place doing it. And I'll tell you, we got here just in time. We're here for the fall. You know, living down in the South for 14 years like I did, I really kind of missed the fall. And we thought, well, if we're going to see it somewhere, this is the place to see it up in New England. And when we got here, and it was just about a week and a half ago, the leaves were just barely starting to change. And now it's really happening fast. It seems like you see a difference from, you know, morning to afternoon. Lisa says she's only here for the bears, but we haven't seen one yet.
Yeah, you know, y'all can have the snow, because the first speck of snow I see, I'm ready to come home. I can't. I cannot deal with snow and cold weather. I just don't get along with cold weather. I don't think you guys do it.
Can't do the snow, huh?
No, I have.
Well,
we
can't do the heat.
Yeah, hey, you know, I guess. I feel like I can always take stuff off, but I just can never put enough on.
I don't know. This summer really turned me against excessive heat.
You know, it's been in the 99, 98 here this year. It's been hot, so.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And those guys, they experienced it for a few days down here, and it was miserable.
It was brutal. Yeah, it really was.
Absolutely. But,
all right, so how's the truck coming, David?
We're getting there. It looks good. We actually got it outside right now. We're fixing to soda blast the frame and get the frame painted up. And, you know, we got to make some decisions on some other things, like on the rear end and stuff, what we're going to do there. And I know we've talked briefly about it the last couple of days. And see what we're going to make on the back of it. And, you know, so far, so good. I mean, I feel like we're ahead of schedule. I can make leaps and bounds on it. I mean, pretty much. It's just the point now where we're just waiting on pieces and you know, decide on some things we need to do. And the interior part would be the last thing I do. And I want to spend a lot of time on it. And the more it gets towards winter, really, the more I slow down in the RV side and the more time I can spend inside this truck. And we're going to make it. I want the wow factor outside and inside.
Yeah, well, you know, the phone lines are completely full, so obviously everybody's excited about having you guys on, and I know we've got a lot of new listeners, so I want to let everybody know what truck we're talking about. This is our project truck, what we call the Signature B, taking an older truck, and this one's pretty rough when we started. It's a 97 T600, and reconditioning it, and bringing it up to Signature truck standards, where as much as we can get done, we set a budget of about $60,000, and we wanted to see what we could do with a really old, ragged truck with a $60,000 budget, bringing it back to those kind of specs. Now, we're going to announce something that we really haven't told anybody yet, and We're there, I think. We've made the final decision on this, so we'll go ahead and announce it. We didn't really know what we were going to do with this truck. We had talked about putting a driver in it, moving some freight. We really want to maintain control of this truck so that we can use it to test new ideas and new products and really follow up on a lot of the things that we're doing. So we thought about putting a driver in it ourselves. Then we actually had an offer to buy it before, you know, we really even got started on it. And just in the last 2 weeks or so, Lisa and I have decided that we're going to run the truck. We're going to build it as a single axle, and we're going to use it to build a custom trailer around the country doing what we do, so that we'll have control of the truck. We'll be in it every day. And so it's going to have a couple different specs just because of the trailer we're going to be pulling, but not really that far off what we had originally planned.
Right. And I know we wanting to build the back a little different and do a few more things, but, you know, our biggest issue, and like I've said from the get-go, our R&D is really important. And I know it's important. Bruce's R&D is really important to him. And we can test this truck. And it's just, you know, every 3 or 4 months, we actually have something new out, and we're going to be able to put it on a truck and get results within 30 days. And that's what we need.
Yeah. And we'll be doing it. I mean, I'll be driving the truck every day, and we'll be traveling around the country with it. So wherever we happen to be traveling and doing the show, people can come out and see it. We'll be at the truck stops. We'll be at the trucking events. We'll be at the truck shows with this. And we'll be in it every day, and we'll be testing new ideas and new products, so we're pretty excited about that. So I'm leaving your mic open, David, and I am going to get to, as soon as I can find him here. There he is, Mike Beckett from MD Alignment. Mike, welcome to the program.
I was hiding in the corner.
Yeah, I see that. You were ducking.
Yes. I'm doing fine.
And speaking of traveling around the country, have you made it home for any length of time recently?
Well, I just got home just now from St. Louis doing training. I leave again Monday to go to Denver.
Ah, boy, you've been busy.
Business is picking up. I'm very optimistic. First time in 3 years, things are really, really starting to boom.
Well, good, good. We're certainly glad to hear that. And so what have you got going on? You've been doing a lot of training. Anything new to report?
It's all the same stuff, different day, different town. We run into the same problems every place we go. I wish there was something new and exciting, but there's not.
But it's amazing, and I know you've been doing this a long time. It's amazing how the same basic problems just repeat themselves over and over, isn't it?
Yeah. The shop I was in today, we jacked up 2 trucks and checked all the wheel bearings, and out of 12 wheel positions, 10 of them were loose.
10 of 12 wheel bearings. I mean, that really that's the basics. And you know, people will call me just about every show, and I learned all this stuff from you, and one of the first things I have to tell them over and over and over is, have you checked the wheel bearings? And I think people think I'm kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really
10
does.
Out of 12. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah, we consistently find 80% loose, unless they're the sleeved, non-adjustable, or unitized type bearings, which are the new ones that have been coming out the last 4 or 5 years. Those 90% are good. 95% are good. On the other side, the adjustable bearings, 80% are too loose.
Wow. Now, on the newer style, what can be wrong with those?
Somebody who didn't know what he was doing with the sleeve bearing put it in and tried to adjust it.
Got it.
The unitized bearing is just that after 600, 700, 800, a million miles, the bearings start to fail, and okay, we've got a problem. It's time to fix it.
Got it. Okay. Now, on the adjustable wheel bearings with 80% consistently being loose, is it because nobody checks, or is it because they're not adjusting them properly when they do check, or both?
There is a standard procedure that's in almost every manual. It's in the TMC manual. Everybody uses the same standard basic procedure, and nobody follows it precisely.
Ah.
You're supposed to do it if you follow the procedure. There's supposed to be no tires, no rims, no drum on. You're supposed to be working with a bare hub. And when you're done adjusting it, you're supposed to put a dial indicator on it and check how much end play you have. It's supposed to be between 1 and 5 thousandths end play. Well, 90% of the people use the correct procedure, but they leave the wheels on. And when they're done adjusting it with all the weight that's on there, they can't find any end play even if they used a dial indicator, so they quit checking years ago. They just tighten it up, back it off a quarter turn, say it must be good, and it's done.
Oh, because the weight of the tire in the rim is just is way too much to notice any play that might be there.
Yeah, it masks the play, plus it prevents them from properly adjusting the wheel bearing in the first place.
Got it. All right.
You know, double a lot whammy. Of motorhomes we do, we get mm-hmm. them in, and I have a major problems with wheel bearings. I mean, 80% we check is loose.
Mm-hmm.
Never fails.
Front and rear.
Yep, front and rear.
Wow.
Does not matter.
Yep.
I mean, these guys that have vibrations, they bring them in. The first thing I check is the wheel bearings on the motorhome. And
mm-hmm.
you tell a customer that, and they think you're nuts.
Interesting. All right. Well, I see we've got some hands up, and if we get some time, we'll come back through. But want to get to some calls before we start to run out of time. So you guys, mics are open, and we're going to start getting to some phone calls. Let's go to Todd in Tennessee. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing this evening?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
Presently a company driver, fixing to get into my own truck. I'm looking at an 07 670 Volvo. They did, it's a 450 Cummings in it. They did have APUs on it that the company pulled off. It's a pretty large fleet that does do good maintenance on them. The only thing that concerns me is the I-shift in it. I haven't heard you talk much about I-shifts. Most people I talk to say there's no problem with them, but I have talked to some people that say there is. I'd like to know your feelings on it.
When you talk to the people that say there's a problem, what problem do they say they've had with them?
As far as parts availability when they do break down and long downtime.
That doesn't surprise me. That is a Volvo problem in general. And I still own two Volvo trucks, and I deal with this on some of the simplest items. I couldn't get a mirror. I had a truck down for a day because I couldn't get a mirror. That is a Volvo problem. Now, having said that, I don't think that you're going to see a lot of problems with the transmission itself. When you do, parts could be an issue, and downtime will be. Now, I haven't heard anything inherently wrong with the transmission. I haven't heard of any common problems with them. It's a mechanical, you know, unit, so obviously something could go wrong. I drove one and really liked it, and I've looked at the technology, and I really like it. It's the next step in the evolution of an auto shift transmission in that it senses road conditions and even puts itself, almost disengages and lets the truck roll free, but not unsafely. And it's designed to improve fuel economy by disengaging when it can. So it's, like I say, it's the next evolution of transmission technology. And like all the other auto shifts, if we need to, we can put it into manual and shift it ourselves. So I liked it when I drove it. I like the way it shifts. I like the fuel economy aspect of it, and I'm not aware of any inherent problems with them.
Great. So I may give you a call back when I do get it. I plan to put some other stuff on it as I get money.
Got it. Got it. All right. Good stuff. Thanks for the call. Yeah, the transmission, I haven't heard of anything. There aren't really that many of them on the road, and I think maybe in the last 2 years I've had five people that have had the transmission that have called, and I haven't seen any real problems with them or heard of any problems. Let's go to New Mexico with the question for Bruce. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. First-time caller. I'm running a 2005 Volvo with the IFX 450 Cummins in it. Last year and this year, I've been doing the same work, which most of my loads are empty trailers. And then we do haul some loaded trailers, which are light loads, and occasionally we haul overweight generators, which that'll get up 110,000, 115,000. My bobtail rate is right at 21%. Last year, I was getting 6.2 miles to the gallon with this truck. This year, I'm down to 6.1. The type of work I'm doing, I feel I should be getting better fuel mileage than that out of this coming. Any suggestions?
Well, have you changed the mufflers?
This is an ex-interstate distributor's truck out of Tacoma, Washington. It has one muffler on it.
Is it still the stock muffler?
Yes, it is.
Well, you need to get our straight-through performance muffler on there. That will give you back at least a quarter or more. The quarter jet hot-coated manifold would give you another quarter mile per gallon. The fast fuel system. The ported jet hot-coated manifold.
Okay.
The fast fuel system would be another quarter. The fleet air filter, another quarter to three-tenths.
I keep my air filter, I change it about every 4 to 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I don't know.
That may even be too often. Are you doing any oil analysis?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and everything has come back good. I'm running Delvac 1, the synthetic oil.
Okay. Yeah, the one thing you've got to watch with changing paper filters too often, and depending on the environment, if you're in a fairly clean environment, it won't matter. But, you know, there's an advantage to changing them in that we keep a little better airflow, but the paper filters, when they're new, also they actually allow dirt into the engine, and sometimes we can see the silicone numbers go higher than normal if we change too often. The advantage to the fleet air filter is we keep good airflow and we trap dirt better, so it would be a better way to go.
Okay.
You know, we just did an Acer Cat. It was a 2007 Kenworth with a 550 Acer. It's on with Reliable. It's female owned. The truck was a real dog, no power, constantly downshifting. We did the fast fuel systems, two mufflers. We didn't quite have our fleet air filters in at the time. They just came in the other day. Right, those two would have been in. And we put the power box on. She now drops on Snowshoe Mountain on Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania. On cruise, she wanted to try it. She only dropped 3 to 4 miles per hour, where before she would drop about 20. She instantly gained a half mile to the gallon. We're working on her driving techniques. We're going to get her another half mile to the gallon. She's coming back for the fleet air filters. So from the time she came in, by the way, she was in 9 different Caterpillar distributorships. Nobody could help her since 2007. And she had a truck up for sale, has an ARI bunk on it, 120-inch bunk. It's now back off the market. She loves the truck. And we're going to have her up at least a mile and a half to the gallon within the next 2 weeks.
Sounds impressive.
We haven't done. And then our last thing to do will be the 264 gear ratios.
That's a lot of.
You've got to make change.
Gear ratio is in this thing.
Yeah, but by leaving that stock muffler on there, it's a single stack. You're just choking the engine, and no matter what you do up front, you're not going to help yourself. The muffler's your dam, and that's your your fuel mileage loss right there. So for $158, you can fix that.
That is, yeah, okay, I like that idea. I'm Scottish.
Put the fleet air filter in so we get the air in, put the performance muffler on so we can get the exhaust out, and you'll see a big difference in the truck right there, and then we start making changes. But every change that you make, the fuel mileage savings will pay for the next one.
Now, this coming year, I've been planning on trading this truck off sometime in the middle of next year.
For what?
And I'm looking to get more in compliant with the EPA rules that are coming out for California and the other 16 or 17 states.
Okay.
Hold on 1 second. California isn't very clear yet on what their rules are and when they're going to go into effect. 2014 for owner-operators, but they keep telling us that date's going to change. What other states? I mean, I don't know of any state that's got anything in writing.
Gina, I was told that Washington, Oregon, Nevada, Arizona, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, with some of the other states that were following along behind California.
No. There may be talk of it, but California's been talking about this for a decade, and it's still not in place. There isn't any legislation that I'm aware of in any other state that has put a date on this yet. And I'm telling people, don't get rid of a truck, especially if we get it to where it's getting reasonably good fuel mileage, we get our maintenance under control, and we like the truck. Don't give it up to go with the new technology based on you know, EPA regulations until we absolutely know that we have to. The other thing that it looks to me like will happen, and Bruce, you may have some new input on this as well, is by the time California actually enforces something, you know, they're talking about it, they've got some dates, they keep changing them, but by the time they actually enforce something, we should have some sort of a retrofit for the older trucks as well.
Absolutely. That's my main project for next summer. I'm going to divorce myself from the telephones and work on a DPF retro kit. I've talked to the people this summer. I wanted to get started on it, but it just didn't happen. But another thing that I spoke with a couple owner-operators that go into the piers, and we're going to be building them new glider kits. They said so long as your registration shows 2011, 2012, 2010, they don't tilt the hood and look. They said you can have any engine under the hood you want. The registration of the truck is all they look at.
Yeah, and that's in the ports where, you know, if you run into the ports, you've got some different regulations to deal with. But as far as the state of California, I still think we're a long way from them enforcing anything on the truck side. And by the time they do, there are going to be other solutions. So, you know, we've been through this with CARB already, with the APU fiasco, the reefer fiasco, which they still haven't gotten right. And they've got companies and owner-operators out spending money and making business decisions, and then they change their mind. And then they randomly change dates at the last minute and extend things. So I'm really recommending not making any major business decisions based on California, especially this early in the game. We've still got plenty of time. So I would continue working on the truck you've got right now, get the fuel economy up, and just sit back and wait. We're going to have plenty of time to react to California when they finally do make up their mind. And there's just so many things that could still happen. We have lawsuits being filed. We've got new technology coming out as far as retrofitting older trucks to make them compliant. So I would wait and see, and I wouldn't buy any new trucks. As far as other states, nothing that I'm aware of anywhere on the books with a date in the other states as far as that goes. If you are listening on the call, lines are completely full. We don't have any phone lines open, but We do have room for questions. Now is your chance. Mike Beckett's here with MD Alignment. If you have any tire or alignment-related questions, by all means, press 1 right now. Lisa will screen your call, and we'll get to those. Engine-related questions, Bruce Mallinson's here from Pittsburgh Power. Got any questions at all about fleet air filter or the Signature B truck we're working on? David Counts is here from Fleet Air Filters. And now I see hands going up. Let me try to sort out some calls here and see what we've got. Let's go to South Carolina. Rico, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Kevin. I was going over your DVD course of action and getting everything lined up to start searching for my truck that I want to buy to get into the business. My goal and my objective is to stay under $20,000 and to buy an older truck like you're suggesting. But the problem that I guess the question that I have in my mind is when you're looking at these older trucks and the mileage is higher, like 800,000 miles or more, what exactly should we be expecting when we're going through, or how much should we invest in doing all the steps that you suggest on the DVD and things of that nature? What's reasonable? Your word that you hate to use.
Yeah, and you know when I made that particular DVD and when I was teaching that course, the average used truck that I was recommending was probably in the $35,000 to $40,000 range. The market's changed completely. We've dropped to the point now where I'm recommending $15,000 trucks. So it's almost a half to a third of the price. So we may want to adjust how much we invest into finding the right one, but it doesn't mean we just want to run out and grab one. We still want to find out as much as we possibly can about that truck before we make the decision. And we're still looking for where that is reasonable for the number of miles that are on the truck. Obviously, a truck with 800,000 miles is not going to be in the same condition as a truck with 400,000 miles. But we want what we see, we want it to be a well taken care of 800,000 mile truck. And we're still looking for the same things. And I could still reasonably see investing, say, $1,000 to find the right truck before I spend $15,000 to buy it and make that part of my budget.
Can I give you an example? Like last night I was telling you about I was stuck between a 2003 Kenworth that I found. It had the 264 rear ends in it, and it's only got 574,000 miles on it. But the thing, the catch is when they sent me the pictures today, when I was going over looking through the pictures, it was like it was sitting on a back lot somewhere with a lot of grass and stuff growing up around it. I'm like, well, how long has this truck been sitting? And it's been sitting there for a year and a half.
And that's not uncommon today. And you know what? I've said this before. We have to adjust to the market. And some of the things that we were saying 3 years ago, it's changed. 3 years ago, if a truck was sitting for a year and a half, I said just scratch it off the list. I don't want it. There's too many other choices out there. Well, today, that's almost the norm. I mean, we're seeing that a lot more often now, and we just need to know that it happens and what kind of things we know we're going to deal with. Hoses, seals, AC, things that don't hold up well when they sit. But it doesn't. Now I'm saying, look, there are a bunch of these on the market. They're an opportunity. And the prices have come down enough that we can afford to fix those things after they sit. And since we've got him on with us, Mike Beckett, if you were looking at an older truck, and we want to know as much as we can about the truck before we buy it, as far as tires and alignment, what kind of inspections would you recommend doing on the truck?
Well, if a truck's been sitting a while, I'm going to assume that we're going to have some dry rotting and cracking in the tire. And a lot of trucks that have been sitting for a while may not have the tires that were running on it before it got parked. So So I can walk in and look at the tires and start making judgments that are not valid at all. So I'm going to have to jack it up. I'm going to have to do mechanical inspection. I'm going to have to look at the bushings. I'm just going to have to inspect the oil in the hubs. Has it set long enough that it sucked moisture in and contaminated the lube? There's a lot of different things that I would look at. And depending on the make and model of truck and the type of suspension, that changes things I want to look at too.
Got it. Now, one of the things I've recommended over the years is that if we're looking at a truck with, say, 400,000 miles on it, one of the inspections that I've recommended is a really good, thorough front-end inspection, and not necessarily just to find the things that are wrong, but I've often said that if we've got a lot of front-end issues, a lot of worn parts, first of all, we want to know it before we buy the truck, but second, it's always been an indication to me, an early indication, that the truck hasn't been taken care of well. Do you agree with that?
To a certain extent, yes. But fortunately, except for the kingpins, generally it's fairly inexpensive to fix the things. Okay, I got to put bearings in. Great, I can strip bearings up and put that in quick and seals. The brakes need to be replaced. Okay, brakes aren't a big deal. That doesn't take very long. It doesn't cost a lot of money. The springs are going to be good no matter what happens. If it's an air ride front suspension, I got airbags, that's another set of issues. Okay? And as far as determining if the bearings are good, that doesn't take very long. Give me a jack it up. I'll spin the tire. This is something a lot of guys don't know. You spin a steer tire up fast with your hand and then reach your hand over and put it on the air brake chamber. If the bearings are pitted, you'll feel the vibration in the air brake chamber. You don't have to take it apart to inspect it. You can feel it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great tip.
Good tip. Yeah. The situation that I'm running through also, Kevin, with this particular, the people that have that truck that I'm telling you about, it's kind of like you telling on your DVD. They can't allow you to take the truck off the lot so that you can go and get these good. You know, they got a shop there, but, I mean, you know, we're in an adversarial position. How am I supposed to trust them?
Yeah, and for me, again, that a lot of times that to me is just one of the things I talk about on the DVD is that every time we look at a truck, we have to take a different mindset than most people take. Most people, when they go look for the truck, they're looking for the truck that they want to buy. Well, we can talk ourselves into almost every truck. If it has a couple things we like about it, pretty soon we want to buy it. I tell people, take the mindset, you want to look at a truck until you can find some reason not to buy it. And you want to be looking for the reason not to buy a truck. And when you look at enough trucks and you finally come across the truck that there's no reason you can find not to buy it, that's the one to buy. And for me, early on in the process, this would be enough for me to say I'm not going to buy it. If I can't get that thing in my control for a day at least or more to do these inspections on my own at independent shops, that's enough to cross it off the list. Now, if we're looking for a particular truck, very particular specs and a certain mileage and a certain price range, and we've been at this for a while, then the longer we have to look, we may start to compromise a little bit on some of these things, but not a lot. And with today's market, so many trucks available, I wouldn't compromise. I mean, unless I can be confident that I can get in and do those inspections and figure this stuff out, that would be enough for me to cross it off the list. If they've got a shop available and it's just that you can't take it off the lot, if it's just a logistics issue, can you bring somebody in to look at the truck on their lot?
They did say that I could bring a mechanic there. You know, they didn't have a problem with me bringing anybody there.
Yeah, see, I'd be okay with that then. If I can bring somebody in, I can probably get enough good information on this truck by bringing somebody in that I could be confident as well.
How would I do that by being in, you know, a different whole, totally different, I mean, it's 1,000 miles away. I mean, how can you get some advice on how you can pull that one off?
Yeah. Last time I checked, the phones are pretty good at the 1,000-mile range.
So just call some shops and see who, you know, who you can pay for their time or something like that, or?
Yeah. Yeah, you just get on the phone and you start, you know, checking providers in the area, you know, and get somebody. And, you know, we have to pay for these things, but I'm okay with that. I would much rather spend the money now than have to spend the money later to find out I've got a truck that's going to be a maintenance nightmare.
Kevin? Well, I'm going to get off and let somebody else get in. I appreciate all the help. I'll be calling back some other time to ask some more questions, but I want to see the time is near, and I want to let somebody else get some questions.
Okay.
In.
Good talking to you. Mike, what was that?
I'm a member of the International Auto Technicians Network. It's an online network of technicians who chat with each other, and there's a heavy-duty forum and a transmission forum and all kinds of stuff. You could sign on to that, IATN, become a member, and if you needed some help, you could go in the classified section there and place an ad and say, I need somebody to check out a truck for me, and you'd probably have guys all over the country that could be available at different spots.
Wow, that's a great resource. What was that again?
IATN.com.
IATN.com. Lisa, are you...
Might be .org or .net or something, but Google IATN, International Auto Technicians Network.
Okay, perfect. That's a great idea. I appreciate that. Let's see. I've got some... Got some calls down here somewhere I'm supposed to be getting to. So, Lisa, where am I supposed to be going next? I think she's on the phone screening somebody. Let's see. Dale in Alberta, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey there.
Hey, we've got a shipper that's suddenly getting greedy, and I need to lose 1,000 pounds. How much?
Holy cow, that's quite a diet you're going to have to go on.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm not sure I'm prepared for that.
Yeah.
How much weight would I save going to wide singles from duals?
Do you have all aluminum on now?
Yes.
And this is tractor only, right?
Yes.
Now, I need to get this on a chart. Maybe Mike can help me with this one. I'm not sure. I think when you're going from steel to aluminum, the savings is 400 pounds on the tractor. So if we're going from aluminum to wide singles, I think it's going to be have to be somewhere less than 400. Mike, do you know that number?
The number that I've always heard is if you go from duals to super singles, you save about 800 pounds on the truck and trailer. It's 100 pounds per wheel position.
That's what I thought, too. But for some reason, and maybe I'm wrong on this, and you know the manufacturers always try to give you the numbers that make it look as good as possible. For some reason, I always thought that was moving from steel rims originally to the aluminum wide singles, but maybe not.
It would be more if you went from steel duals to aluminum. But
okay, so
aluminum,
it is more
aluminum.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, if it's an Acert Cat and you take the Acert off and make it to a single turbo, you save 400 pounds.
Gosh, Bruce, I wish it was. It's a 2010 Urea Cummins. And then
I see. What year is it?
It's the 2010 ISX Cummins with the urea aftertreatment.
Oh, yes. So this is a new truck.
New.
Well,
yeah, newest technology.
And I'm sure you don't want to take all that off yet, right? Because that's almost 400 pounds right there.
Well, and you know, that's the whole problem. The EPA has mandated all of this so that some seagull in California doesn't get a headache. And yet, you know, we've added 1,000 pounds to the trucks, but we haven't given any allowance for that.
Yeah,
we have an ISX.
Have gotten really heavy.
We have an ISX DPF that's sitting in the shop, and all that stuff is off right now. We're making some changes, and it's incredible how much weight it is, and we guesstimated it to be between 400 and 500 pounds. So,
yeah, and a lot of that weight has ended up on the steer axle. You know, the steer axles keep getting heavier and heavier. I mean, we're seeing trucks bobtailing almost at the weight limit on the steer axle.
Well, I'm full of fuel with all my worldly possessions, tire chains. I'm 21,200 pounds, so I'm going to thin out some tire chains, take off some tools. I'm going to go back to using one fuel tank, and you know that's I'm hoping to shave 1,000 pounds that way. But I was
well, it looks like you can get another 400 then out of the wide single conversion.
Grind some tread off your tire; they're lighter then.
Gosh, you know, if it was any other time of the year, I'm okay with that, but now we're looking for more tread.
Right.
Hey, Mike, maybe this is another one you can answer. Aren't there some lightweight brake drums on the market?
Yeah, but I don't recommend them.
Okay, that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch them.
Got it. Okay.
Well, thanks, Kevin. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Well, we've got calls everywhere now. Lisa, where am I going next? Maybe she's paying attention to me this time. Or maybe not.
It's my bad.
Maybe not.
Of course I'm paying attention. Who do you think's running this place anyway?
Well, somebody needs to.
We are going to Travis in Wisconsin. He's got a Fleet Air question.
Got it. All right. Travis, welcome to the program.
Hello, guys. How are you guys all doing tonight?
Great.
Doing good.
For Dave Kuntz, I got a T660, and what kind of fuel economy would I save by putting your air filter on my truck?
Average on those trucks is 2 to 4 tenths.
2 to 4 tenths, and all you got to do is wash them out and spray some kind of a film back on them and put them back in?
Right. What you do, you pull the filter apart, and we have an oil that goes back on it. And what
okay.
the oil does, it'll positively charge the filter, and
yep.
that traps the really small micro parts of dust.
I see. Okay.
On all that right. truck, is the filters under the hood, right-hand side, a little small filter?
It's a filter right under the hood in the middle of, on top of the engine.
You happen to know the part number right off?
I'm driving it right now. I cannot give you that.
Okay. So, some of I know me and Bruce have been talking about we got a problem child filter, and I think that was a 3750, wasn't it, Bruce?
Well, yeah, I don't recall the part number, but it was on a 386 Pete.
Yeah. We know that filter has a serious problem. We have downsized that filter some, and we think if that's the one you got, I would expect a little bit more than 2 tenths out of it. I would expect more between 3 and 4 tenths is what we're thinking.
I see. Okay. Couple more quick tidbits for Dale Howard up in Canada. I had duals on my tractor, and they were aluminum. And I switched over to super singles, and I took it to a CAT scale, no difference in truck of any sort, just that, and I shaved 550 pounds.
Wow.
Weight off my truck. And question for Bruce quick, if I may, is if I got 336s in here, would it be better to go to 355s or that? 355s and a Pittsburgh power box, or just a Pittsburgh power box for a little better in the hills and such?
Well, I do not like the 336 gear. If you're going to make a change, why not go to the 264s or the 269s or 279s, depending on tire size and cruising speed, and then put the power box on it. Why would you want to go from a 336 to a 355, which is actually better, but I'd put the power box on and try the 336s and then make the decision on the rears. But I would rather see you run it in direct.
Right.
Hey,
Travis, what transmission?
I have a 13-speed. That's what I was wondering if. There's really no such thing as a 13-speed with a direct drive yet.
No. But what you would do, and the reason I was asking is because we don't want to try it on a 10-speed, I don't think. But on a 13-speed, you could, because what will happen is you'll turn the 13 speed into an 11 speed with one true overdrive gear. You'll run it, if you were to gear it at 264, you would run it in 11th with 12th there for that occasional really light load, deadhead, bobtail, you know, kind of thing. And you could pick up, you know, 3 to 4% by running in direct.
I see. Because, see, I was at your class this hot summer, I could call it, down in Kansas City, and you told me to put it in 12th gear, and I do it, and it helps, but it's not, it's too high, you know?
Right. Well, that's the advantage of going to the 264s. You give yourself a lot more flexibility. And this is why, and Bruce said it, and I'll say it, in today's world, that 336 is a horrible gear ratio. It's designed to run about 70 miles an hour, which will never get any fuel economy at 70 miles an hour, no matter what we do. And if you try to drop to 12, like sometimes we recommend, sometimes it works, sometimes it's okay. It's just you're stuck right in the middle with that ratio. The 264s would be virtually the same as going to a 355, except they allow us to run indirect and then give us really two more gears, but one of them we'll never use. Gives us that overdrive gear when we need it once in a while. So it picks up the fuel economy and gives you more flexibility. So if you are going to spend the money to re-gear, I would re-gear to the 264s.
What do you think that would cost me, Kevin, to switch over to what you just got done telling me to maybe go to?
About $6,000.
What was that, Bruce?
It's about $6,000, parts, labor, gear, lube.
Okay. All right.
And let me tell you something. Go ahead.
Is it really that much, Bruce, to change the two gear sets?
Oh, yeah, by the one we just did, well, we had to get the gear sets out of Peterbilt, and it was right at $6,000. This was for a 2008 386.
Wow. Maybe I need to update. I've been telling people about four. I thought we could always change the gear sets in the $4,000 range.
And, you know, we've talked about how much horsepower you lose in double over. Well, we just had a client put his Prevost motor home. It is a D-Deck 4, 500 horse Detroit. And to the rear wheels, he has 325 horsepower. The coach is a dog. Nope, 325. That's a 35% loss.
Wow.
Now, and it just came out of the shop at Johnson & Tires down in Baltimore for the second time. And that's what it has. Now, that Allison 6-speed transmission is in lockup, second through six. So, and that's a .64 final drive.
Oh, no wonder why. That's horrible.
And but what are we in an 18-speed, a .73?
.73 or .74. You know,
okay.
Why, when we've got 500 horsepower, do they gear this thing like this? There's no need to.
Well, that's because the engineers don't understand that going down the highway, we lose in the overdrive. And we've been talking about this for years. But it wasn't until your radio show when people started to listen to it.
Wow.
Years ago, you begged people to gear the truck to run in direct, use overdrive for going downhill when you're empty or when you're light. But people just didn't want to believe, and it does work.
Well, you know, the manufacturers are finally getting the idea. Everybody now has a much wider range. But the problem is it's in all the new trucks that we can get it. But it's good to see that all of the OEMs, Eaton, Meritor, Volvo, everybody that makes a transmission now has expanded the availability of direct drive transmissions. They're offering several models of direct drive, whereas before, you had to hunt hard just to find one.
Right, and the advantage of doing it with an 18-speed is we have an 1850 torque and a 2050 torque transmission available. You just don't use the highest gear.
Right, got it. Hey, let's try to grab another call or two. Let's go to Alberta. Glenn, welcome to the program. Hold on 1 second, Glenn. There, I've got you now. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Quick question with my transmission. As I'm going down the road in high gear, I'm getting a little bit of chatter coming out of it. And I got thinking tonight, could wheel bearings contribute to that, or is it something else?
Mike?
How many miles are on it?
A little over 600,000.
Have you changed the crankshaft damper?
Well, it's a Volvo engine, so I don't know if that's the cause. Do you think it could be that?
I rest my case.
Yeah.
What is
that is a problem.
But can they be changed? I've noticed on the website some of the guys talk, and it sounds expensive.
Well, it's internal, isn't it, Bruce?
That's what I thought.
Well, at the very least, it's behind it, the front cover, the timing cover or whatever you
right.
call it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy anyways, but that's where you think that's originating.
It's where I think it is.
Okay, and those vibrations can cause other problems in the engine too, can't they?
Yeah. The torsional twisting just travels completely through your drivetrain, through your engine, through your transmission clutch, down in through the drive shaft.
Is there a balance?
Terrible thing.
Or is it just get a new dampener and get it put in there?
Get a new damper and get it put in.
Because, yeah, there isn't a balancer available, is there?
No, we don't make a mercury balancer for that engine.
Okay, guys. Well, that's the way I'm going to go. And great show. Keep it up.
Hey, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Any other suggestions on that? He's got what feels like might be some driveline vibration, wondering if it could be bearings.
No, I don't think there's any chance that's bearings. If it was bearings, it would be coming up through the floorboards and through a seat. So the direction's wrong.
Got it. All right, let's see. We're off to South Dakota for this one. Judd, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Say, I got a question about an 04 Columbia I just recently bought. It's an EGR motor, and I've just been having nightmares with it. I've replaced the turbo, both V-pots, EGR valves, everything within the last week and a half, 2 weeks. And I'm still having troubles with this motor. If you don't keep the thing up to about 1,600 RPM, even when you go to grab another gear, it just barks at you, like backfire sort of. And it seemed to have gotten better with the new turbo, but it's still doing it. And I know I listened to an episode of yours a while back that somebody had suggested a way to unhook the EGR. And my driver's telling me that every once in a while he'll get a check engine light. And when that check engine light comes on, that's the best the truck ever runs.
You can't unhook the EGR on a Detroit.
Cannot. No way whatsoever, huh?
You cannot do it yet.
Okay.
Still working on it. Bruce, how many calls do you get like this one?
Every day? Out of
every
our
day.
250 calls, we get about 100.
Exactly like this, nothing but EGR-related problems over and over. And,
EGR,
you know,
DTF.
I really appreciate you coming on. Bruce, if anybody has questions, how can they get a hold of your shop?
724-360-4080.
All right, and we're wrapping this up. Mike Beckett, if anybody has questions and they need some help, how would they get a hold of you?
No, we're not interested in talking to
them. Okay.
800-617-5592, or you can go to our website, mdaline.com, send us an email. We'd be glad to try and help you.
And one of the things they can always find is a shop using your equipment, your methods, correct?
Yes, and as with everything else, because we sold him the equipment, we trained him, doesn't mean the same guy trained him is still there. So you owe it to yourself to do a little due diligence and ask him some questions where you trust him with your truck.
Good, good. And we will, we're going to, we kind of did this as a roundtable tonight with everybody on here, but we're going to get all these guys back again real soon. And Mike, I want to do a show just on alignment, tire issues, and we can go over those kind of questions, how you would know whether a shop is somebody you want to deal with. Is that that's something you'll do with us soon?
You betcha. You just let me know when you want to do it, and we'll get it done.
Perfect. All right, David Counts, Fleet Air Filters. If people have more questions, how can they get a hold of you?
You can do fleetairfilters.com, and you can pull our website up and look on it, or you can give us a call at 251-654-0892.
Fantastic. As always, I want to thank you three guys for coming on and answering the questions, and we will do this again soon. The live show is coming up on SiriusXM in 30 minutes, and we'll see you all there. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.